As you know, this summer, Pastor Jen and I are taking turns responding to different questions and topics that you all bring up. Last week, the question was around why bad things happen to good people, or why good things happen to bad people, I guess. And today, our question is kind of a combination of why is there evil to begin with, and then even more to the point, how does God work in our lives, particularly in the face of evil? The old lament goes like this. If God is so just and loving, why is there evil in the world? Why couldn't God make a world where everything was happy and good? Well, there's all kinds of ways to get at that. One of them appeals to logic. And the logic goes like this. It says, okay, we believe that God created us with a free will. We have the ability to choose. Now, if the only choices we have are good choices, then we're really not free. In order to be free, we need to be able to choose between good and evil. When my daughters were little, in their early single-digit years, my wife and I would give them choices. We would ask them, do you want green beans or peas with supper? They thought they had a choice. Ha! They did, between two good things, right? They had choices, but they were our choices. We did not say, do you want green beans, peas, potato chips, or cookies? Cookies, right? No, we gave them limited choices. So we were actually just playing with their little minds, but we let them pretend they had a choice. So the answer from logic might be nice and neat, but there's no mercy in that at all, is there? In fact, the answer from the perspective of logic doesn't feel very loving. It can feel actually pretty cold and heartless. See, when evil covers us, when we feel cold inside, when we feel like hope is only a distant memory, logic is actually hurtful. There's no mercy in it at all. In the last congregation I served, one of the funerals I had there was for a 6-year-old boy who died of cancer. It doesn't get much harder than that. Can you imagine telling the grieving parents, well, you know, this kind of thing happens because it's part of the package of life. And in order to be free, we need to be able to choose between good and evil. And that means there has to be evil. And can you imagine saying that to these grieving parents? Absolutely not. When evil covers us, life feels like it doesn't make any sense. We feel betrayed, maybe hurt, scared, hopeless. And when that happens, part of us wants to desperately try to make sense out of things, because we want to have a God who is in charge of everything, a God who makes sure that little boys do not die, a God who watches over us and protects us from every form of evil. The problem with that is our desire to have a God who is in control of things can lead us to assume that God either makes things happen, or at the very least, God allows them to happen. Now, we've all heard people say things when they hurt that in the moment might make sense to them, but actually kind of hurt, right? Things like when somebody dies saying, well, it was God's will. When that 6-year-old died in Stoddard, there was a woman at the funeral who actually said this to his mother. I guess God loved him more than you did and took him home. Imagine. We want to try to make sense out of things. Yet when evil overcomes us, we want to cry out to God, where were you? What good are you? What kind of God are you that just seems to sit by when all these awful things happen? So the question becomes, how is God at work in our lives, particularly in the face of evil? Sometimes we like to assume that it's God's job to fix things, to solve our problems for us. We can't do that for our children. How could God do that for us? Well, here's what happens with that kind of reasoning. If God causes good things to happen to some people and bad things to happen to others, does that mean that the ones to whom good things happen, that they are better, that they believe harder, or they're more faithful? And then what does it imply about those who suffer, those who are hungry, the poor, those who can't ever seem to get a break? See, that kind of reasoning ends up blaming the victim for their suffering and their pain. We've all probably heard people interviewed on TV after a tornado or a flood or something, some kind of calamity happens, and invariably there'll be one person who says, well, when the storm came, I prayed to Jesus to save me, and he did. Okay, what does that say about your neighbors? Did they not pray the right way? Not believe hard enough? When people we love get sick, disabled, or die, does that mean God is punishing them? No. All that kind of thinking does is cast God as a mean-spirited deity who meets out punishments and rewards. We heard in our gospel today that Jesus rejects that kind of thinking. Jesus referred to two things that were common knowledge in his time. One of them was there were some faithful Jews in Galilee who had gone to temple and made their sacrifices. And for whatever reason, we don't know why, the governor, Pilate, had them executed, and he took their blood and mixed it with the blood of their sacrifices in the temple. And Jesus asked, do you think they were worse sinners than others? No, he said. Then there were people who came to the village of Siloam. Siloam is where there was, ironically, a pool, pool of water that people thought had healing powers. So they may have even been at Siloam for healing. And while they were there, the tower at Siloam fell over and 18 people were killed. And Jesus asked again, so were they worse sinners than others? No. That's not how God works. God does not make evil enter our lives in order to punish us or test us to see if we believe hard enough or to see what we're made out of. Yet still we want to try to make things make sense. I think one of the biggest problems we have trying to understand God and how God is at work in our lives today comes from assumptions that we like to make about God. And those assumptions, many of them are rooted in the far distant past because, as we know, a long time ago, the writers of the Bible assumed that anything they couldn't explain away, God did. Sickness and healing, droughts, famines, plentiful harvest, all as a punishment or reward. It was their attempt to try to understand and to make sense out of things. Now, the old adage says that religion starts where science ends. And what that means is, when we get to the limits of our ability to understand and explain things, then we say, well, God must have done it. So long before we understood things like weather, by the way, the forecast today wasn't this. So we like to think we understand weather. Okay, it's because we had a bike ride scheduled today. Yeah, okay. Before we could understand weather or physics or chemistry or biology or any of the sciences, people just assumed that God did this stuff. God made it rain. God caused floods. God caused earthquakes. When in fact, I've learned all I need to do to make it rain is put my boat in the water. But of course, we understand so much more than our ancestors did, right? So does that mean that we should reject God because the ancient explanations and those assumptions don't fit anymore? Of course not. God hasn't changed. What has changed is our ability to understand God. And we live in a time when we have the joy, the excitement of beginning to understand God in new and different ways that our ancestors couldn't imagine. Things like quantum mechanics, the theory of relativity, give us new insights into the nature of what God is like. And I want to tell you, it's pretty cool. We don't have to make a false choice. God has not changed. Our ability to understand God has. It's kind of like the difference between the way we understand parents when we're two, because when we're two, parents are all-powerful. When we're, 10, they're not, are they? They don't know everything anymore. No, see? And then when we're adults, we understand our parents in a different way, right? And then there's the kicker. When our kids have kids of their own, then they understand their parents yet differently. The parents are the same. They haven't changed. What's changed is we have, and our ability to understand, and our knowledge, and our experience. God did not create evil in order to test us. We don't do that to our kids. We don't even do that to our pets. Why would God do that to us? So even if we can explain away all the big questions, questions like why is there evil? Why people suffer? Why some people die too young? Even if we have answers to those questions, it doesn't really answer the question, does it? Because that's not what we're really asking. What we're really asking is, where are you, God? Are you there? Do you care? Do you hear me? God doesn't fix our problems. God doesn't make them go away. But what God promises to do is come to us and to be with us always. Ultimately, focusing on questions like why there is evil in the world is an attempt to hang things on God and let ourselves off the hook of responsibility, as if God is the only one who's supposed to be active and we just sit back and watch. God isn't separate from us. God is with us and in us, and God works in this world in us and through us today. God lives in us and works in our lives in at least two directions. First, God comes to us in Jesus with the promise of love, forgiveness, and new life. And Jesus promises, I will always be with you. I have joined you in your suffering. I have joined you in your pain. I am always with you. I will never leave you like orphans. Do you hear that song Leslie sang a few minutes ago? The refrain, it says, every step, every breath, you are there. Every tear, every cry, every prayer, in my hurt and at my worst, when my world falls down, not for one moment will you forsake me. Even in the dark, even when it's hard, you will never leave me. That's the answer, friends. God is with us. Jesus is here in us. And then the other direction that God works in our lives draws us into partnership with God in redeeming this world. Remember the theme we were living in Lent? Do something, right? The question behind that was, God, why don't you do something about the suffering and the hungry, the homeless, the victims and the poor, and all those who are touched by evil in the world? Why don't you do something? And God said, oh, I did plenty. I made you. I redeemed you. I set you free. And I send you. I am with you. I travel with you. I am as close as your own breath, facing every evil, every pain, all your suffering and all your joys with you. But through it all, we're never alone, never forsaken, never by ourselves. Our God loves us so much, he will never abandon us, but be with us every breath, every step.